Diversity.
Here to have cause confusion.
I'll crash his board.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours. I'm here with our Ramon Olones, specially selected. Apologies, I'm a little bit late. Clandestine Mossad agents were trying to prevent me reaching my PC, but I fended them off. I did a judo chop like Roger Moore in a 1970s James Bond. Judo chop like Lord Athol Layton, who was a British wrestling star of the 1950s, later known in the Detroit area and in Australia as a commentator, who was also known for doing a judo chop. So there we go. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. Now, we're going to be talking, of course, about Mandelson, Fallout, and Starmer stuff. We're also going to be looking at the Epstein situation in America, which has, in a strange way, been on delay in America. It's like, because there are so many rich and powerful people implicated, because the media is so heavily corporate and controlled over there, the story's been slower to produce a political response. But it is, I'm pleased to say, gathering pace. And it's gathering pace owing to the efforts of one intrepid hero. One intrepid hero, friends. And that man is Thomas Massey. Why is Thomas Massey a hero? Okay. You can say what you want about his libertarian cringe libertarianism. I don't give a shit about that. This is the only thing that matters about Thomas Massey at this moment in time. Look at that number there. Zero. He has taken no money from them. That means he is fearless when it comes to this issue. This man is single-handedly responsible for this entire news cycle. Single-handedly responsible for Mandelson and Prince Andrew and all the rest of the shit and all of the news here. And he's single-handedly responsible for the news cycle over there. Him alone, intrepidly working to make sure that there was a bill, there was an act of Congress to force Trump to release these files, to force the DOJ to be honest. And he is holding their feet to the fire. And we're going to spend a good portion of this show watching footage of this man. This man is the hero. It's not the one we asked for, but it's the one we need. Whether you're left, right, libertarian, anti-libertarian, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. His actual political views are irrelevant. What matters is that he is on it like a dog with a bone. If you're a chud, right, if you're a chud, you shouldn't be retweeting clowns like Captive Dreamer on Twitter. You should be forming a Praetorian Guard to protect Thomas Massey wherever he goes. Wherever he goes, he needs to be protected. Mr. Massey, sir, I see you're having a steak, sir. Let me taste it for you to make sure that the Mossad have not poisoned your steak. Mr. Massey, sir, I see you're let me make sure that you're safe going home so that you're not killed behind a bush. Mr. Massey, sir, wherever you go, we are going to make sure that you're safe. That's what Chud should be doing at the present time. This man needs to be protected at all costs. This man is the one. He's the ace in the hole. Did you ever watch that film about intrepid journalists trying to tell the truth in the 1950s, starring good old Jimmy Stewart? He's the ace in the hole. He is the one. So we're going to be talking about him. Now, before we get going here, I have to remind people, pick up a course at the academic agency. And also, another course is available from the University of Buckingham by my buddy, Eric Kaufman. I'm going to play this ad. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Epstein a lot. And about Mandelson as well. And about Keir Starmer.
The ideology of our universities and many other institutions can accurately be described as woke. woke is not an epithet, but used properly describes the dominant cultural left belief system of Western institutions. Have you ever wondered how woke came about, who believes in it, and why? Or how the culture war between woke and anti-woke forces is redefining society and politics? Well, there's good news. I've developed a 15-week online course on woke at the University of Buckingham, which is open to the global public, the first of its kind in the world. The course is not assessed, but is focused instead on deepening your understanding of woke. I offer a rigorous objective analysis of this phenomenon, similar to the way I would for fascism, communism, or any other ideology. I've studied the cultural left since the mid-1990s, and I'm ideally placed to help you understand woke. Sign up today using the attached link.
All right, and yeah, you can click on the link there in the show notes if you're interested in that. Okay, so first of all, a friend of the channel, a frequent collaborator and guest, the Black Horse, asked me to explain what the hell's happening in British politics. And here's what's happened, okay? I'll just break it down real simple, and then we'll get to the wider Epstein stuff and Massey and all the rest of it, okay? So last week, details dropped from the Epstein files, which severely implicated Peter Mandelson as well as Prince Andrew. Okay. The Prince Andrew story, by the way, is not going away. Nick, tell it to your straight Ferrari, had an entire hour this morning when I was driving here. And it's it may be the straw that broke the camel's back, the thing that's going to force me to buy a new phone so I don't have to listen to LBC anymore. Was Nick Ferrari having an hour's call in? What was the topic? Should King Charles give an entire speech about Prince Andrew, or Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he's known now? Should King Charles address this? You know, what are the pros and the cons? Nick Ferrari. Call LBC now. That was the call in this morning. But anyway, so that happened. And also the big news really is that one of the Epstein emails show Peter Mandelson was in touch with a banker, an investment guy known as Jamie Dimon, who was working for JP Morgan Chase. And while he was in Gordon Brown's cabinet, he was giving privileged confidential information, which he only had access to because he was the business secretary, to his mate, Jamie Dimon, with Jeffrey Epstein as a go-between, which allowed Dimon to make investment decisions which he wouldn't have had. You know, they basically, it's insider trading. Not only is it insider trading, it is highly illegal indeed, and probably reaches the threshold for treason. This obviously meant that Peter Mandelson not only had to resign, but had to step down as a Lord. He had to removed himself from the House of Lords. Then, remarkably, Peter Mandelson tried to have a puff piece about himself published in the Times, who actually ran a story of Peter Mandelson chilling out in his living room, saying, oh, look at how I've been reduced, and oh, poor me. And I cannot believe that Mandelson would try a rehab story this early in the news cycle. Absolutely disgraceful. But then, of course, the big story all of last week was, has this cast Keir Starmer's judgment into severe doubt? Because how much did he know? Surely the government of all people would know how dodgy Peter Mandelson was. He had already had two scandals at that point. Even in Gordon Brown's cabinet, he had two scandals even before that. Blair had to fire him twice, right? Brown brought him back. And I think he had a third scandal back then. And he had all these question marks that Peter Mandelson's a bit of a wrong un, a bit of a dodgy dealer. So given all of that, how on earth could Keir Starmer appoint a man who was a known liar? Right? Wasn't this a national security issue that he's letting this man in? You know, he's appointing him as the US ambassador. And, well, there was a lot of discussion about whether Keir Starmer should go over this. And after a week of such discussions, a lot of people started pointing the finger of blame at a certain Morgan McSweeney. Morgan McSweeney, if you're a reader of mine, if you're a follower of this channel, you'll know is the major Svengali figure, the organizer behind the scenes, who is the brains behind the Starmer outfit. And in fact, the major figure within the Labour Party who pushes Blue Labour. Okay, and I'll explain more about what Blue Labour is in a minute. Well, his judgment basically brought the government into disrepute. His advice to Starmer, he was the one who pushed for Starmer to appoint Mandelson. Apparently, Keir Starmer did not want to appoint Mandelson. He wanted to appoint George Osborne, the former Tory Chancellor. George Osborne, Gideon, which is a very strange choice. But anyway, they ended up going for Mandelson. Then yesterday, Morgan McSweeney finally resigned in disgrace and has taken the rap for the Mandelson thing. McSweeney has gone. And just today or last night, a guy who is the chief of staff of Starmer, a guy called Chris Worm, he's got Worm in his name. He is also, resigning. Why is he resigning? Probably because when they drop the Mandelson files, as they're going to be known, i.e. whoever had any knowledge of the decision to hire Mandelson, who was in touch with him and so on, it's probably going to come out that that dude had some prior knowledge, didn't tell the Prime Minister. Okay, so that still put a lot of question marks over Starmer because, okay, he's let his advisors take the rap. It's let McSweeney and this worm tongue figure take the rap. What about Starmer himself? So yesterday, Anas Sarwar, who is the Labour Scottish leader, right, the Scottish Labour leader. Up in Scotland, they've got a different parliament, and he is the leader of Labour up there, Sarwar. He cut a promo on Starmer, cut a pro-wrestling promo saying, enough is enough, we need to move on as a country. Starmer's a liability. He's a liability at the ballot box. We need to move on. This is a disgrace, blah, blah, blah. Who's with me? So Sarwar cut this promo, which was meant to be like the starting gun to knife Starmer, which is something, it must be mentioned, within the context of British politics, that Labour tend not to do. You have to understand that the culture of backstabbings and psychodrama and all of that stuff and this kind of raw Machiavellian game tends to be the preserve of the Tory party, not the Labour party. But Sarwar broke with tradition and he cut this promo on the Prime Minister yesterday. And then Keir Starmer said he's going to hold a backroom meeting of all the MPs. And literally, I mean, talk about pro wrestling, right? Keir Starmer behind closed doors, that is in somewhere in the Houses of Parliament in a big meeting room, cut a promo with all the Labour MPs there. And as it was reported, journalists were lurking outside the room, literally with their ears to the door, trying to hear what Starmer was saying. Okay. Obviously they couldn't hear what he was saying. Starmer apparently cut a promo that was so good that all of the Labour MPs miraculously rallied around the leader, right? Starmer, who's known for his charisma and his oratory, obviously, cut a promo that was so good that all of the Labour MPs who witnessed it came out saying, yeah, that's my leader. We're going to carry on. We've dealt with the issue. And apparently in the promo that Starmer cut in front of all the Labour MPs, a major theme was anti-corruption, that he's going to root out corruption, root and branch from the Labour Party, that the things that led us here are never going to happen again, which is very interesting because anti-corruption is how every dictator story starts, by the way. every dictator ever started their dictatorship under the rubric of anti-corruption. And if you're interested in anti-corruption, you can have a look at Chairman Xi over in China. He basically cemented his power through quote-unquote anti-corruption. So that's interesting. But also interesting is that if you understand anything about Labour Party dynamics, there's always been the Blairites and the Brownites within the New Labour. And the third faction, the hard left, represented by Jeremy Corbyn, the Militant Tendency, Momentum, the Corbynistas, Tony Benn back in the day, right? And Blairism and the entire New Labour project was about transforming the Labour Party from being an old-fashioned quasi-Marxist socialist party into being a modern, forward-looking, managerial kind of sort of Thatchery, you know, happy with business, happy with markets, patriotic, happy with forever wars, happy with the big bombs. Right, this was Blairism. But then within Blairism, within New Labour, there was the Brownite tendency. Okay, is this complex enough for you politics nerds? I think hopefully you're learning something here. Okay, so within New Labour, there's a right wing represented by Tony Blair, David Blunkett, people like Charles Clarke, Peter Mandelson. Right, these are all the kind of rightists within New Labour. And then on the left, what is known as the soft left as to differentiate them from the hard left, like Corbyn and John McDonnell and people like that, and Diane Mathematics Abbott, right? These are the hard left. The soft left are like, actually, Tony and their mates, they go for the patriotism a bit too much. They go for the... they cosplay as conservatives too much. And because they cosplay as conservatives too much, they forget about the values and the principles of the Labour Party themselves, i.e. they're not left-wing enough. Okay? We're left-wing. We're not mental and like commie, like the hard left, like Corbyn, right? But we're still left-wing. What does that mean? We want to do all the net zero stuff. We want to do all the Ed Miliband shit. We want big government. We want to do welfare spending. We want to do all the left-wing things. Okay? If it's up to Tony Blair, slash the civil service. We want a lean, mean state. We want as low taxes as possible. We want business-friendly, private, public partnerships. We want to wave the flag. We want to bomb all the fucking countries. Okay, that's Blairism in a nutshell. Soft left, Brownite Labour is actually no. We want bigger. We want to maintain larger controls on government. We need to do the welfare stuff. We need to actually tax when we need to tax. We need to do left wing stuff. We need to say left wing stuff. If we don't say left wing stuff, we're going to lose votes to the hard left. Whereas Blair is no, to win an election in this country, you have to get conservatives, people who would vote Tory, people who are going to vote Nigel Farage, people who are going to vote Reform. You need to get all these fucking racists in the country voting for Labour. That's Tony Blair's view. Whereas the soft left are always more worried about the hard left, and so if you can imagine. Keir Starmer, for his entire time in power, has had a little angel on his shoulder and a little devil on his shoulder. Okay? Let's say the devil is Tony Blair. He's got Blair saying, look, you need to lean into the patriotism. You need to, like, you know, don't be seen as being smelly and leftist, because the real enemy is Farage. The real enemy is the Tories. The real thing you have to care about is the Daily Mail. Okay? So you need to be seen to don't say any woke shit, reduce immigration. You know, you want to be hard, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. You want to show yourself to be Labour in that mold. Okay? Do not say any commie shit at all. And then on his left shoulder, on his other shoulder, a little angel, you could say, whether it's Angela Rayner or Ed Miliband or Gordon Brown or fucking Lisa Nandy or any of these soft left characters, okay, they'll have been saying, look here, look at what the Guardian's saying. Look at what these commies are saying over in the Green Party. Look at what Jeremy Corbyn is saying. Look at what the base is saying. You're letting down the party. We're meant to be Labour, Keir Starmer. You're letting down the party. How do you, what? We fought long and hard, and you want to halve welfare spending? We worked long and hard. You sound like a Tory, Keir Starmer. But this is the Labour Party, God damn it. And this is why Keir Starmer has been so fucking clueless in the past 18 months. Because one week he listens to Tony and friends, and then the next week he listens to all the left lot. That's why we've had 14 U-turns in 18 months. 14 U-turns in 18 months. Because Keir Starmer is a weak leader who doesn't know whether he's coming or going. He doesn't seem to have a brain of his own. He follows the advice of the last person he talked to, seemingly. U-turn after U-turn. So what has happened? What has actually been the upshot of this Mandelson business? Well, the trouble is, if you were into the blue Labour idea as I was, okay, and there are people within Labour who were blue Labour as well, if you were into that idea, it did come with a couple of bad things. One of the bad things it came with was a pretty major slide dollop of Zionism, I'm afraid to say. Now, I always said that in the ideal scenario, you want blue Labour without the Zionism, because that would be a winning formula. Generally, you're socially conservative. Generally, you're kind of, you know, a little bit left on economics, but not crazy, right? When I say not crazy, not kind of crash the economy crazy, like Red Ed and his stupid mates, or like the Green Party, okay? You're sensible on economics. But also you're not allergic to state to using the state to do stuff. And generally you're socially conservative. It's a winning formula. Unfortunately, every single one of the blue Labour operatives, including Morgan McSweeney, including Luke Akehurst, including Maurice Glassman and all these other sorts of people, were hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool Zionists. And Morgan McSweeney, who is the Svengali, the chief brain behind this operation, severely implicated in the Mandelson stuff, has had to resign. And what's happening in the party now is that Mandelson, of course, who is, you know, a massive Blairite, massive, you know, on the right of the Labour Party, pro-business, he has been taken off the map by Epstein, right? He's had his career ended, and I don't think he's coming back from this one, okay? Not even Mandy can come back from a, you know, they're calling it the biggest scandal in 50 years in British politics. It's probably an understatement, okay? It's a lot of people are implicated in it. Mandelson's done, okay? McSweeney was the entire driving force behind that side of the Labour project. He has been taken out and is no longer there. Another person who is very Blairite within the party and currently in the cabinet is a man called Wes Streeting, okay? Wes Streeting, unfortunately, was heavily in contact with Peter Mandelson and is trying to get ahead of the game now by releasing his WhatsApp messages between himself and Peter Mandelson, okay? Basically, what all of this is being interpreted as by the Labour Party is that Blairism, the Blairites, the right of the party, the blue Labour is fucking done, okay? It is done. It is over. Blair is done. Streeting is done. McSweeney is over. Mandelson is done. What that means is a total victory for the quote-unquote soft left, Ed Miliband, the Brownites, etc. Which can only mean that we can speculate about what happened in that room when Keir Starmer cut the promo, okay? The trouble with Keir Starmer is that we always got the impression that he doesn't really believe in anything, any of the things that he's been saying, okay? That in his heart of hearts, he did not believe in the Blue Labour McSweeney project. in his heart of hearts, he didn't believe in the Blair Project. In his heart and hearts, he didn't believe in the, he was being made to do this stuff against his will. That really what Keir Starmer is a creature of the soft left. He is a human rights lawyer. In fact, he may even be, you know, he may not even be that soft. He may even, like, he may be towards the left of the soft left, if that makes any sense. So I don't actually have that much problem believing that when he got in that room, he basically looked in the faces of Ed Miliband and Angela Rayner and all these sorts of people and said, listen, okay, it's over, right? We're not doing this McSweeney shit anymore. It's time to be Labour. It's time to stop pretending that we love the country. Stop. I'm sorry for making you pretend to do the flag stuff, right? It's been appalling, the racism that we've had to put up with. That stuff is over. Now is the time to be Labour and to take out those fascists, blah, 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 blah. Some sort of speech like this with some anti-corruption stuff thrown in. Otherwise, none of these people like who have rallied behind him would be doing that. In other words, Starmer has said, look, I'm going to be with you guys. Whatever you guys want, I'll back. Soft left's in power now. Because otherwise, they would have done him in. Again, weak leadership, right? That they would have done him in. So my reading of the situation is, unfortunately, for this country, the whole Mandelson business has empowered the soft left. It's empowered the Ed Miliband wing of the party. It's basically put them in control. It's put them in control. And the way I would, the way I kind of would picture it is like this. For the past 18 months, if you can imagine, all of the Labour back MPs are people with what you might call woke Tourette's. They have been sitting there gagging, right? Every fiber of their being to blurt out woke shit. I love BLM. Oh, I love BLM. I want to kill all white people or whatever it is, okay? They have been gagging to be more left-wing, to blurt out, you know, let's ban all cars, whatever it is. They've been gagging to blurt it out. And if you can imagine behind the scenes, every time they go to say something retarded, Morgan McSweeney with like one of those Frankenstein style electroshock magnets has been like, zzz, zzz, zzz. Now that's gone. So what I would imagine going forward is that Labour are going to get a whole lot more retarded, a whole lot more left wing, a whole lot more net zero, a whole lot, like they're just going to be, they're going to stop pretending that they, in any single way, that they like the country. Because that was McSweeney's whole gambit, to try to make Labour pretend to be conservatives. Didn't work for all the reasons I've talked about before. But now that constraint is gone. So it's going to be, it could even be an entertaining few months. But it's also not great news because, you know, they can do a lot of damage in the time that he's got. Now, a lot of people think that this is just a placeholder, that really Labour are planning to ditch Starmer in a few months' time, a combination of factors. Met, like, do you remember Andy Burnham was stopped from running, right? So but there's nobody ready to take over. Angela Rayner's waiting in the wings, but she's still got to sort out her tax affairs. So Rayner's not ready. Burnham's not on the map. Right. And so their Labour Party are buying time until such time as that it's convenient to get rid of Starmer. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that because I'm not sure if it's in Starmer's character to give up. I mean, look, any other leader would have gone. Right? Is chief of staff is resigning? Is communications officers resigning? Right? It seems like is the government's coming down from around him, and he's still there, and he still refuses to go. The Starminator, I just don't see him giving up. Do you? I don't see him giving up. I just don't. I cannot imagine that he's not going to be there in 2028, 2029. So, well, tell me if you disagree, but I think he's going to stay. Another thing that I noticed on LBC call-in show was that the longer the story went on, the more public opinion, as represented by LBC callers, shifted towards siding with Starmer, i.e. not only Labour politicians, but the actual public started to rally around Starmer. Why is that? Why did people start to rally around Starmer? Well, and again, this is just how it's presented in an LBC, you know, the sort of person who rings into the Ian Dale show and other such scumbags as this. They were saying, look, in America, nobody's had to go on, like, people who are actually named in the files, people who are actually in direct contact with Epstein, people who are possibly, who are accused of actually being kiddie fiddlers, have not had to resign in America. Starmer's not in the files. Starmer's not accused of doing anything. Starmer has not actually done anything wrong. Why should he be the, it would be ridiculous for him to be the one to go when so many other people are implicated in this. It was also noted, by the way, that Nigel Farage has been quite weak on this issue. Badenoch has been strong, but Farage has been quite quiet. Why has Farage been quiet? Because, of course, his mate, Donald Trump, is so implicated in it. And possibly his other mate, Steve Bannon, is very implicated in it as well. Right? And fill in the blanks, you know. So Farage has been weak on Epstein. So it's kind of like they've made this calculus, Labour. It's like, well, Starmer doesn't have to go. And the longer he stays there, the more these questions start to emerge. Like, hold on a second. There's loads of other people there. It would be weird for Starmer to be the one to go when he's not directly implicated. So that has been very interesting indeed to watch play out. And it could be a big change in British politics because if my analysis is correct, the main faction in politics who have been greatly weakened by all of this is the Blairite faction. And Blair, right, is not going to work with Farage and Reform. He's just not. So, you know, if there's been a major scalp, it's been the Blairite. It's been Blairism. And this is the story that you'll read in the New Statesman. This has been the story on LBC all week. This is the story, really. And so to come back to Black Horse, where does that leave things? Well, it's basically blown up Project Mark Carney in this country. Remember, Starmer's meant to be a British Mark Carney. And this has just fucking wrecked that project because of their closeness to the you-know-whos. So there we are. Speaking of America, let us now go to Thomas Massey. Now, I've got loads of videos of Thomas Massey, and I want to watch a decent amount of Massey coverage.
Change your party affiliation to Democrat.
I thought you did.
I vote with Republicans 91% of the time. And the 9% I don't, they're taking up for pedophiles, starting another war, bankrupting our country.
It's not the hero we want, but he's the one we need right now. I'm into Massey mania, friends. I'm really into Massey mania. The guy has been intrepid. The guy has not given up. He is the reason this is out there.
It's that simple.
Why do you think he is working so hard not to get them released for so many months? What do you think the real reason is?
These files implicate billionaires and friends of him, of his, and of political donors that he's trying to protect. And Epstein also had close ties to our own intelligence agencies and Israel's intelligence agencies. That's why there's so much effort in trying to stop this. And I do believe they'll try to stop it somewhere else. And that's going to backfire on them too.
So the president.
Just no fear, the man. He's got no fear. let's carry on watching. I honestly think that, you know, everybody accuses me of being down on everyone. Let's give credit where it's due. This guy has shown that the balls on him to take on the entire system.
Also, I'm going to say this here on camera because it's important. One of Kash Patel's staff threatened my staff with a criminal investigation if we didn't straighten up and play ball.
I was going to ask you about that, but since you brought it up, and I didn't
I'm bringing it up.
Okay, you brought it up.
And so, like a criminal investigation having nothing to do, he said it was going to be a fraud. We're going to investigate one of your staff for fraud. Right. And he told another one of my staff this. If you guys don't straighten up, you know, if you want to play hardball, if this is how you want to play it or something like that, this member of your staff is going to get criminally investigated for fraud. A very specific threat.
So that's Kash Patel involved in direct cover-up of Epstein. Just completely exposed by Thomas Massey. Just another day in the life of Massey.
And I have tried to keep this from being political. In some respects, yeah. We failed. You know, the Democrats want to make this about Trump, and the Republicans want to make it about the Clintons. I want to make it about the survivors and getting them justice and transparency.
Example of something, maybe it wasn't intentional on their part. I'd like to hear his take on the redaction of the CEO, who's listed as a co-conspirator in the 2019 child sex trafficking case.
So can I ask you, because, and I want to ask if this is the same person, Todd Blanche also said about that tonight that the document you're citing there has victim names in it.
Correct.
Seeming to say that's why there are redactions. He said, we have just unredacted Les Wexner's name from this document, but his name already appears in the file thousands of other times. And he says the Justice Department is hiding nothing. Is that the retired CEO? That you're referencing?
It is. He unredacted it after I found it. That's a problem. And I'm glad they've admitted they made a mistake by redacting that.
So you're saying it was redacted when you went in there today, and after you tweeted that, they unredacted it?
Correct. Now he's got four other names he needs.
Now, I should mention that last Friday, Nick Fuentes did a show all about Wexner. And he said, like, look, this Wexner is the key person to take out, which uncovers all of the seed money for Thiel and Vance and that whole network and Palantir, and the whole thing revolves around this guy Wexner. And then literally a couple of days later, Massey hones in on Wexner, puts pressure on, and he's forced them to unredact Wexner. Isn't that incredible? It's incredible.
To unredact. Did he respond to that? There's a list of 20 people, and there's four men in there that need to be unredacted. Here's another troubling thing that I found.
Can you say who those four men are tonight?
I don't think they're well known, and so if I did, it wouldn't matter, but I could probably say them on the floor of the House, but I'll give the DOJ a chance to do what they did in these two examples, where I've discovered something, and now they've responded.
So look at that. He's going on TV. He's saying, look, I know the names of these people who are redacted, and I'm going to give you a chance to unredact them. Okay, otherwise I'm going to say it on the floor of the Congress. Why is it important that Thomas Massey says it on the floor of Congress so it becomes part of the congressional record and becomes a matter of public record? So Massey is actually playing this incredibly well. He's playing it incredibly well. Got to give the guy credit. Let's see what else there is here. What about this one?
Yeah, sorry to keep you guys out here that long. Well, that was an interesting experience.
The
user interface is a little clunky at first, but what I saw that bothered me were the names of at least six men that have been redacted that are likely incriminated by their inclusion in these files. So that's the first thing that I saw. It took some digging to find them. And then I'll let you talk about what you saw.
Well, and we discussed that. I mean, there are six men some of them with their photographs that have been redacted, and there's no explanation why those people were redacted, and Thomas discovered it through his MIT logic.
Interesting. Very interesting.
What's the name of the six men that you identified?
Probably should do that from the floor or in a committee hearing.
Review.
Yeah, I would like to give the DOJ a chance to say they made a mistake and over-redacted and let them unredact those men's names. That would probably be the best way to do it.
So how much are the redactions?
So here he is actually on the floor.
That is wrong. Do not let the Senate muck this bill up. And if you are, if you're a party to that in the Senate, you are part of this cover-up that we are trying to expose. I am sorry if one of your billionaire donors is going to get embarrassed because he went to Rape Island. That is what they have coming. In fact, they need to be on the other side of bars, a lot of them. Some of them will be embarrassed, but some of them need to go to prison, and the survivors know that. So how will we know if this bill has been successful? We will know when there are men, rich men, in handcuffs being perp-walked to the jail. And until then, this is still a cover-up.
Now listen to how he's talking. Listen to how he's talking. And Donald Trump wants to primary him. Donald Trump is putting $800,000 against him, running a candidate against this man. Let's just watch this again.
Decades. That is wrong. Do not let the Senate muck this bill up. And if you are, if you're a party to that in the Senate, you are part of this cover-up that we are trying to expose. I am sorry if one of your billionaire donors is going to get embarrassed because he went to Rape Island. That is what they have coming. In fact, they need to be on the other side of bars, a lot of them. Some of them will be embarrassed, but some of them need to go to prison. And the survivors know that. So how will we know if this bill has been successful? We will know when there are men, rich men, in handcuffs being perp-walked to the jail. And until then, this is still a cover.
This is what we need. Uncorruptible, heroic will. Isn't going to take no for an answer. Isn't going to play ball. Doesn't give a shit. Is prepared to face down the entire system. Cometh the hour. This is heroic behavior from Thomas Massie. If he hadn't given that speech, we wouldn't have this entire news site. Like, he forced this through. He forced it through Congress.
Hey, I think historically when we look back at the Epstein scandal, it's going to be bigger than Watergate. And it's going to be, by the way, the president didn't go to jail. The attorney general did. It's going to be bigger than Iran-Contra. And here's why. It spans four administrations. It's deeper than any political thing on the surface. And so I think in terms of the number of people who are affected, I mean, how many people were affected by Iran-Contra, okay? Or what?
Seriously, if you're in Kentucky, I go and camp outside his house and make sure he's safe. Run a patrol on either side of the road where he lives. Nobody goes in, nobody goes out until you come past the patrol. He needs to have like the best security in the world, seriously.
Watergate. I mean, specifically in that instance. Obviously, everybody's affected when there's a lack of transparency and bad or fraudulent things happening. But I mean, directly affected or implicated, that was a finite group of people in both of those. Here we have what seems to be almost an infinite number of people involved with Jeffrey Epstein. At least we don't even know yet how many there were in the criminal enterprise or the seedy part of it. And it's like that Spider-Man meme where there's six Spider-Men, they all look the same and they're pointing at each other. You've got all these billionaires pointing at each other. You're in the Epstein. No, you're in the Epstein. No, you are in the Epstein. It's you who is in the Epstein files. And you're the one who went to the island. I didn't go to the island. Anyways, there's sort of this circular finger pointing that's going on. But I think it's a scandal that is longer in time.
Can you imagine these corrupt fucks in their boardrooms and in the White House and everywhere else freaking out? How can we shut him up? Why won't he shut up? How can we get Massie? Have we got anything on him? You know, surely, like, you know, shag the hooker up the arse or something. Is there any? No, nothing, sir. Nothing we can do. Come on, don't you have him on file? No, he hasn't taken a penny, sir. This is it. This is the stuff of movies.
Him to litigate that. Look at those. Acknowledge there are at least 20 people that the victims have given to the FBI. The FBI has 20 names at least of people that need to be investigated. This is not a hoax. There are more names. Those names are not being released. The only argument for not releasing those names is either the FBI doesn't think the victims are credible, or they don't want to embarrass those rich and powerful people.
And just the last clip of him, and then we'll have a look at, like, realistically what could happen.
You mentioned that there are some things that have been redacted that probably shouldn't have been redacted.
Yeah.
Is there anything, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, six men's names. One of them's listed as a co-conspirator. Why would you redact his name?
Right.
There's not what I'm saying is, it's not just victims' names that they've redacted.
And how can we get those names then? Like the public generally?
Well, I'm hopeful the DOJ will release them now that I've pointed it out to them. They've either got to say, okay, we made a mistake, or we're not going to unredact that.
Okay.
And are you going to be going back to see? I know, like, there's sort of like a procession now of members who are going.
Yeah, I'm scheduled for tomorrow morning too.
Okay. And what are you looking to? What are you going to look into tomorrow that you haven't looked into today?
It just takes a while. There's millions of files. I've still got files on my list to look at.
Keep him safe. Keep him safe. It's LA Confidential. Okay. So, who were some of the people? I mean, there's this Wexner chap who is in the crosshairs today. Also, another person is Howard Lutnick. Howard Lutnick, who's part of Trump's cabinet. Huge calls for him to resign. Now, one of the benefits of Mandelson being such a public scandal here is that everybody is rightly wondering, right, if Peter Mandelson's had to go, why hasn't Howard Lutnick gone? If that happens here in Britain, what's so different about that over in Washington and America then? Now, my understanding is that the media have done a greater cover-up job in America than they have in this country. Okay. One of the drawbacks of Prince Andrew and to a lesser extent of Mandelson is that they've acted as a smokescreen for the whole story. But on the plus side, it is in the news cycle a lot. And Mandelson's had to resign. And there's going to be a police investigation. The police have raided his homes. There's going to be a government inquiry. All the sorts of things you'd imagine to happen in a serious first world country that hasn't kind of fallen to banana republic levels of corruption. I mean, ideally, it wouldn't have happened at all in the first place, but there is at least fallout here. People are rightly wondering, why is that not happening in America? And I have to say, looking at the way things are going and the momentum, I am actually cautiously optimistic that there are going to be scalps. There are going to be people who have to resign. There are going to be arrests. There are going to be, I think Thomas Massie is going to have some success. Are they going to get Trump? I don't think he'll get that far, but we could have some lesser. We could have some Lutnicks, some Wexners and some, you know, and anybody we get is going to be a plus. Let's face it. Okay. So all of that is, you know, I would say, I mean, obviously, it's terrible that it all happened in the first place. It's terrible that there is corruption and scandal and abuse on this scale at the highest levels of power. Absolutely appalling. But we could see some justice. Any justice we'll see will be down to the intrepid heroism of people like Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, and various other people who have not been afraid to tell the truth in the face of power. Young Turks as well have been solid. And I have to say, lots and lots of feminist campaigners, women's rights campaigners, okay? And this is something else that has come out of the Epstein files, which is that Jeffrey Epstein feared those libs, right? He feared the white women. And he actually pushed, right? And there's evidence of this in the files. You can look in there. A kind of online campaign to demonize white women. Do you remember all the Karen memes and, you know, years worth of BAP content and Manosphere and all this sort of stuff? A lot of it was designed to demonize white women, to downplay things like Me Too. Don't forget, who was caught up in the Me Too scandal? Harvey Weinstein and all sorts of other Hollywood types, who, it turns out, if you have a look through Hollywood types, more than one of them also crop up in the Epstein files. Funny that, isn't it? So it's interesting that there was this, you know, at the same time that all of this was happening, there was a large attempt to demonize women rather than respect women. Interesting. So these have been the groups who've come out. These have been the people who've come out fighting, though. People, you know, women's campaigners fighting for the victims. People like Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Young Turks, Tucker Carlson. And in this country, I have to say it's been the left. It's been the organized left. People like The National, right, newspaper. It's been the left who've been more on it, I'm afraid, than many of the rightist publications and organizations, who are, of course, sullied and compromised by their involvement with the same people that Peter Mandelson and Jeffrey Epstein and all these other horrible scumbags worked for. Which is why I keep on saying you can't work with them. And this is the number one topic in all of politics. You can't compromise with Satan. You will end up compromised. This is what I keep on trying to tell Dave Green, the distributist. And he's like, he can't see it. I've talked to him in private messages. He cannot see it. But if you're listening, Dave, I put it to you this way. Imagine you're involved in a really local project. The church roof has been damaged in a storm. And you and your friends want to get together to, you know, get enough resources and money and manpower together to fix that church roof. Really wholesome project. I'm sure lots of people get behind. The trouble is, the only people you can get with the money to do it, they want to support this other thing. And they say, well, look, we'll give you help to fix this church roof, but you have to, like, come out and say that you really support this other thing. You support this other country in the Middle East. And then, you know, and then once you've done enough of that, we'll release some of the funds. And then you go back to them in a few months' time and say, well, okay, I've done all of that. How about some of the, I want to get start working on the church roof. And they're like, oh, well, trouble is, Dave, we've noticed some of your friends, they're not that on board with the whole, like, country in the Middle East thing. That's going to be a problem for us. And then a couple of more months pass. And it's been like, actually, we've been thinking, you know, like, who cares about this church and the church roof? Like, the real thing that really matters is this country in the Middle East, remember? You know, that's why we're all in this, after all. So how about you just drop that? Or how about we turn it into a center for Holocaust remembrance or something like that? Right? You understand? You're not going to get anywhere with any of these people, because it's going to play out like that 10 times out of 10. That's how it's played out in the past 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 80 years. That's why the right is nowhere in this country and in America and in any country in Europe as well, because they keep on going for that gambit, and that gambit has never paid off. What's the definition of madness? Trying the same thing and expecting a different outcome. this has to be the way, like going forward, you have to say, just you don't touch that. There has to be, this has to be the one line. Everything else you can argue about, but that one thing, it's going to upend the whole thing. It's going to, 10 times out of 10, compromise, because you end up having to then, now look at the people who've been caught up in it. Look at Patrick Casey, who, you know, did the stupidest thing ever, went all in at the moment they were on their lowest ebb, catching the knife, finance bros call it. He went all in at the moment that their stock has never been lower. And now he's stuck having to defend fucking Pedophile Island. Now he's crashing his credibility out to defend this bullshit. Or any other person who's chosen this route. So, can't put it in any plainer terms than that. Right, let's have a look then at let's have a look at some super thanks and some super chats before we get out of here today. I will have a look. This Ramon Alonez has been spectacular, I have to say. One of the best in the Cuban line. One of the best robustos available from Cuba. Let's have a look. Now, why? Oh. Okay. Published, not held. Super thanks. Let's do these first and then we'll get the super chats. Okay. Hope people have been enjoying the interview era. Maybe when the interview era is over, which is coming next month, I can put them all together in a big box set, the interview era box set, and we can have, like, as a special extra, the blonde interview, unredacted, maybe uncensored version of blonde, you know, dropping the J-bomb left, right, and center, or whatever else. So, you know, and there's a few more great interviews forthcoming. In fact, later... I don't know when it's going to come out. Is it later today? Later today, I've got my Iranian buddy on, who's going to, we're going to talk about Iran. You know that guy on Twitter, Shah Zadeh, he came on. We had a good hours-long conversation about Iran. Caleb Morpin from yesterday, we got into some pretty... I almost had to censor Caleb Morpin. He didn't get that, like, got, you know, kind of spicy in some areas. But anyway, tomorrow's video is about Stalin. That should be interesting. Todd is back with some very interesting and off-the-wall ideas. I had Scrump and Evelyn on this morning. Apparently it's a shock to some people that Evelyn is a troon. I mean, I thought everybody knew Evelyn was a troon. That's like the one thing everybody knows about it. What else have we got? Basil was on recently. De Schattenmacher coming up. He's been on already as well. There's a couple of and then there's a few other guests, like a couple of surprises lined up down the line as well. So the interview era, I would say, has been fun. Why is it not continuing? Well, I think I gave it a good run, and I'll get back to business as usual for a bit, and maybe, who knows, I'll do another interview season if there's some demand for it down the line. Okay, so where are we? Okay, so Pietor from 6 days ago on five ways the media is covering up the Epstein files. He says, are the people implicated really that powerful or confident or even reckless that nothing will happen? The thing is, I think they were confident, but they've been found out. And that's why I'm actually reasonably confident that there will be, I think we'll get some scalps. I really do. Maybe I'm just a mark for Thomas Massey. Maybe I'm just marking out as a, you know, marking out for Massey. But I actually believe they'll get their comeuppance. We've already, I mean, if Mandelson's getting his house raided by police, more people are going to get their comeuppance here. Patrick GB Arank says, M&S did IVF. So this is on Blonde's last appearance last week on the eugenics problem that nobody wants to admit about IVF. And he says that this couple, the Collinses, M&S, right? M&S did IVF because Simone is infertile. Sex is a gamete selection process. Getting around it is almost certainly dysgenic. This is why trad Catholics are going to be the last eugenic group standing in 4 to 6 generations. Cheers from Arkansas. Keep up the good work against the gay. Okay, thank you very much for that. On last week's office hours, Bloodbase says this is the thing. Yeah, absolutely, Bloodbase. This is indeed the thing. It's a little bit unfortunate. I will mention, it's a little bit unfortunate, in my view, that Rupert Lowe's grooming gang's inquiry has happened in the past week, because it's been kind of drowned out by this much bigger story. I mean, they have been on that. And it's interesting that that is kind of happening at the same time as this is. Many interesting parallels, you might say. And I wonder, I'm just speculating, I wonder if eventually we'll find that they're connected in some way as well. I wonder. I noticed earlier on today, for example, that one of the people that Thomas Massey named, one of the six men redacted, was this sheikh, this Middle Eastern sheikh, who was involved, the Sultan. It's not out of the boundaries of possibility. Not out of the boundaries of possibility. Paul Pezant says, I want to express my gratitude for introducing me to Warstrike a while back. Warstrike, the Inquisition, and yourself are my faves. Keep up the good fight against vibes and captive dreams, comrade. In fact, funny enough, I was listening. One of the reasons I was a little bit late is because I was listening to Warstrike just now. And because I don't have my phone, I have to listen on my, you know, I have to listen in stolen moments here and there on my PC. Warstrike's like 9 hours long, so I only listened like 40 minutes or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, always interesting, of course, that they are, some might say, monomaniacally focused on one issue. But it just so happens to be the issue that seems to matter and keeps on coming back again and again. So that is interesting. Inquisition, I've never actually heard that show. Is that the one that Pete Quinones is on? I like Pete and I like Stormy Waters. If there's a third guy on there, less sure about him. I seem to remember he had a go at yours truly. Anybody who ever has a go at yours truly is absolutely worthless and dead to me for life. So that's the way it plays. Anybody has a go at me, dead to me for life, will never have a kind word. I will never have a kind word for them. I'll never reach my arm out. I'll never invite them on. That's just how I have to roll. Pete the drummer says, the pill is an enormous problem because of its effects on women's hormones. This is on the truth about why birth rates are collapsing. That, I believe, was Walrus. Was that Walrus on that particular one? It literally changes the type of man women find attractive. So it's building in a dysfunction in the mating game. When women go off the pill to procreate, they don't find their chosen partner attractive anymore. How does the pill change the type of change the way that women are attracted to men? Genuine question, I don't know. genuine question. Anyone know? I'm going to wait for somebody to answer. I've never heard that before. I'm not saying it's not true. I just don't know it. It makes them select for less feminine men. It makes them infertile. Okay. Hormones. How could selecting less feminine men be bad, though? Because they're more kind of testosterone heavy and kind of bad boys. Is that the idea? Is that the idea? Don't know. They don't stick around. They need chads. It makes them like pussy men more. Okay. The guy in the chat who's spamming, just fuck off, mate. I don't know what you're saying, but you don't have to say it. You're banned for 24 hours, and if I see you spamming again, you'll be banned for life. Okay. Let's see what else. Just stop spamming the message. It's very irritating. Okay. If you have low impulse control, if you're low IQ, if you're irritating in any single way, I just don't want you here. You know, bugger off. Go and watch some of those people who badmouth me. Those people who badmouth me generally have no ideas. They're generally vibes-based. They generally self-implode. They're generally parts of scenes that aren't going anywhere. They're generally absolutely clueless. So why don't you just bugger off and be with people who, like, you know, more people like you, basically. That's where you belong. This is the era where I'm absolutely done taking any sort of shit from anyone. Okay, what else? All right, so I'm getting mixed signals on the rest. Like, does it make you like more masculine men or more pussified men? I've had contradictory answers on the pill question. Hansel says, this is on the eugenics video from last week. Hansel says, eugenics is biological alchemy. It is satanic. It's just another case of the serpent whispering into our ears, ye shall be as gods. On that topic, read Humani Vitae. This is on the Walrus video on birth rates collapsing. Banana Bender says, the Australian superannuation scheme has left the conversation. This is on the Basil video by Fresh Bomber. Neocons are faking grassroots supports, that video. He says, thank you to both of you for the informative show. I do have a rather controversial question, though. If the gay collapses, it will be catastrophic for Americans. If the gay continues to exist, it will be catastrophic for Europeans. This is clearly a massive conflict of interest. Don't you think this will inevitably lead to a split in the medium term? Well, I think the split has already happened. Phil Feisler says, on the birth rates video, he says, I think you two are severely underestimating the part propaganda has on birth rates. Certainly nowadays with declining birth rates, but even possibly before with increasing birth rates during the baby boom, like women's independence. I can elaborate more if necessary. He also says, my apologies, you mentioned it. On the Epstein files and Noam Chomsky from yesterday, Mr. J.K. says, Caleb Maupin. He says, Chomsky has been involved in Vanis Varoufakis DM25 group as an advisor since 2016, alongside Julian Assange and Slavoj Žižek. It makes me wonder why he is interested in them, if he is essentially a form of leftist containment. That is interesting indeed. I would say Yanis Varoufakis himself. I mean, anybody who's kind of like stuck on TV or put front and center in any single way, I always have automatic, like, you should automatically suspect those people for the reasons that K-Deb outlined in that video. Run up your thermostat. This is on how Charlie Kirk, Tucker Carlson, Fuentes, and Candice Owens tore MAGA apart. That was a much older video. He says, politics is in its Russo era, WCW phase. Just awful script writing and terrible tune in next time to see nothing happen. Soap opera garbage. I can't believe people are still marks for this junk. Boring. Yawn. Call me when Franco arrives. P.S. You should do some straight up wrestling reviews. Vintage wrestling is much more entertaining, satisfying, and real than modern politics. Well, I was thinking of... somebody mentioned that I went on GB News. Notice I went on GB News, stuck my foot through the screen, broke kayfabe, and told Jacob Rees-Mogg to his face, who is going to sue MI5? Remember? They didn't call me back, did they? So that was a crack in the matrix when they let me on GB News. Anyway, let's carry on. Utis 4321 says, on wrestling, I was considering actually doing a couple of wrestling videos on my little culture channel. I got to get back to pork scratching review. Trouble with the interviews is that they take a lot of my time. So I haven't had time to do pork scratching review, which a lot of people love, right? But I also haven't had time to do any of my little side projects. I was considering doing some very unusual, kind of unique pro wrestling content, because I'm kind of interested in, how can I put this, certain archetypical characters that get recycled. So like, you know, I mentioned that character at the start, Lord Athol Leighton, right? He played like the aristocratic heel, similar to, you know, Lord Stephen Regal or William Regal. But before him, there was a guy called Lord Lansdowne in the 1930s, wore a monocle. And then in the 50s, there was Lord Leighton, there was Lord James Bleers, there was a guy called Lord Carlton. And this was like a standard gimmick that existed in that era. It was like a easy heat, right? There was a guy called Sir Alan Garfield as well, who was a reasonably big star. Then in the 70s, there was Lord Alfred Hayes, who many people remember when he was a commentator. And then, of course, there was, Lord Stephen Regal. And in WCW, there was this thing called the Blue Bloods with Dave Taylor. But I was interested in making a little series, kind of going through the histories of some of these obscure characters I'm talking about. There's the evil Middle Easterner gimmick, right? Everybody remembers the Iron Sheik, right? But there were precursors to, there was the original Sheik, but then before the original Sheik, there was a character called Ali Baba, the Terrible Turk, going right back to 1905. And I'm always interested in these archetypes that just like every generation has somebody who does that gimmick, you know. In the 90s, there was Sabu as well. He was a Middle Easterner, wasn't he? So, So, there's all sorts of obscure wrestling history I want to get into. Right? Does anybody remember a character called Tiger Jeet Singh, who was like a kind of Indian Punjabi Sikh character? He had feuds in Detroit and things, and he was around in the 80s. But before Tiger Jeet Singh, there was Tiger Johinder Singh, and a legendary Indian wrestler called Dara Singh, who was in Bollywood movies and things like that. And they broke box office receipts He had a feud with a guy called King Kong Zaiza, who was like this Czech guy in India in the 1950s, or 1960s, I think it was, Dara Singh. I mean, he had a match with Luthers later. You know, this guy's a legend in India, but I don't think anybody's heard of him. You know, and so there's a kind of like, he has a direct line from him to the great Khali and people like this. So I don't know. I don't know anybody's interested in any of that stuff, though. Utes 4321 says, Europe has no future without Russia. Russia, this is on Europe can't save its democracy. Here's why. That was the Sloppinator, by the way. I put it in without thinking, and then I realized I hate Here's Why, kind of BuzzFeed style. Anyway, Utes 4321 says, Europe has no future without Russia. Russia has spent the last 40 years trying to join Europe, and Europe spits in their faces for their trouble. Russia isn't powerful enough to dominate Europe, but without Russia and its resource as a partner, Europe has no freedom of action and will either be an American colony or wiped away by Africa. Re-migration is not going to happen because there are state behind the migrants. Carney cemented Indian colonization of Canada. Honsol says, this is on earlier video from today. Based is over. What comes next? That was Scrump and Evelyn. Controversial video, to say the least. Although I would say a lot of comments had nothing to do with what was discussed. Many were just commenting on the fact that, yes, indeed, Evelyn is a cross-dresser, but it's like, hello. I kind of know, like, everybody knows this. So it's like, you know, it's like, what am I meant to do about that? I noticed a lot of people who commented on that video had never left a comment before. Got my spidey senses tingling. Why, when this channel's been around for a decade, are people commenting, you know, for the first time ever? Why, out of all my dozens of videos, was that the video you decided to come in and break your silence on? So I'm calling bullshit on that. What I sense, friends, is outside interference. What I sense there is a little Telegram group or a snidey little DM group. It's some organized action of people doing an old-fashioned raid, because those two have some enemies within the space. And I thought I just spot an old-fashioned raid when it comes to those comments. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, I've been around the block, see. I've been on the internet since the mid-90s. You can't kid me. Anyway, Honsel says, AA, you were absolutely on target regarding the Epstein and the 4chan poll. We are living in a lie engineered by an epistemic autocracy. AA, check out the roots of the belief system, proper psyop called evolution. Go deep, sink, and ye shall find. Check out Eric Davis, David F. Noble, Douglas Hoogan, or, to get a bit kooky but accessible, the Collins Brothers, Ascendancy. Well, I mean, I don't want to engage in too much kookery, right? But I disagree with Scrump and Evelyn on this. I think that it's not a coincidence that Jeffrey Epstein's talking points, as seen in the Epstein files, are almost perfectly echoed by certain right-wing online circles who have since been revealed to be running defense for MAGA, running defense for Trump, running defense for that little country in the Middle East. It's like, what are the odds that they, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's just so online that he ended up with the same politics as those circles. Pull the other one. I call bullshit. I think that there's been an influence operation, and they use 4chan as a kind of means of getting a certain different type of messaging out there. And I think that Scrump and possibly Evelyn too, because they were on 4chan, are just a bit defensive because nobody wants to admit that they were tricked. That's my view. But, you know, feel free to, many people disagree with me and they're free to. But I'm highly suspect of many things that came out of 4chan. I'm highly suspect of the Anon culture, the frogs, as they're known on Twitter. I'm highly suspect of basically all of those groups that came out of that, especially because of what we know now, and especially because all of their talking points are commensurate with the trajectory of where Israel has gone and their general strategy of base washing and trying to inculcate a certain attitude on the online right. So I stick to my guns. You know, we'll never be able to prove it, but I think the Epstein files are as good a clue as we can possibly get. UTIS 4321 says, this is on Europe can't save its democracy. He says, your guess is completely wrong about Russia. A geopolitical goal of the USA has been to keep Russia out of Europe. The story of Ukraine is the story of Russia making a deal with Europe. The Americans getting mad, and Europeans never following through. Europe and America instigated a war in Ukraine, and Russia still fulfilled their gas contracts. Europe has found itself completely dependent on the USA through the sheer incompetence of their leadership. A Franco-German-Russian understanding as the only way to maintain peace in 1914 and as the only way for Europe to gain subjectivity in geopolitics today. Europe has no access to resources and now will have to pay a premium for them because it went to war with its provider. And for what? A clown. Well, that is, I mean, I will say that was a pretty, the walrus ended up being one of the most controversial guests owing to his views on Russia, mainly. You know, people know my views on this. I don't necessarily agree with all my guests. Thomas Cubitt says, this is in keeping with the grounding of Ride the Tiger. This is on the Base is Over video. I recommend the dual fuel Gosney for the advanced grill man as you watch everyone freaking out about old news. The dual fuel Gosney for the advanced grill man. Okay, I wish I knew what you were talking about, Tom. What's the dual fuel Gosney? Are you talking about like fuel for a grill, for an actual grill? I don't know what he's talking about. Okay, let's have a look at super chats now. Coney on Entropy says, Starmer not resigning breaks kayfabe. What if Labour loses the Gorton and Denton by-election? Does he go then? What about the council elections in May? Well, that's what a lot of people are saying, Coney, that Starmer is holding on for now. When the election defeats start piling up, then he will go, come what may, probably in the summer. But the reason Labour are rallying around him now, so this analysis goes, is that by the summer, Angela Rayner or whoever else should be freed up to devote time and attention to it, and the Labour Party will be shored up. I don't know, though, because I struggle to see Starmer going, period. If he didn't resign over this, what else is he going to resign over? Coney says, Starmer just refusing to resign is seriously damaging to the pretense of kayfabe in British politics, especially to the left-wing marks. This is Vince Russo levels of script writing. Coney says, did you know that Steve Hilton, David Cameron's former chief strategist, who was the inspiration for the character of the Stuart Pearson character in Thick of It, is running to become the governor of California? No, I did not. That's very interesting. And Coney says, do you think Massey will make a presidential run in 2028? Maybe, but I would say his utility is in doing this, what he's doing right now. I mean, I don't know if he'd win any president. I wouldn't get behind a presidential run for Massey because I don't agree with his lulbert politics, but you know, when it comes to this, he's, like I said earlier, an absolute hero, an absolute hero. More super chat. Super chat says, Wizzy says the middle class will shop at Iceland before Rayner is PM. Maybe. I kind of want to live to see Prime Minister Rayner, though, don't you? Wouldn't it be funny? I mean, you could say, oh, well, she'll wreck things. But, I mean, look, we've had fucking Johnson. We've had Sunak. We've had Starmer. You know, what's an Angela Rayner? What's an Angela Rayner? I mean, you know, why not? Do you remember in Downfall, right, when it's clear that Berlin is already taken and the Germans are dancing on the table, right? That's basically where we are now. So fucking why not? Let's come on, Big Ange. You know, at least you'll give us a feast for the eyes, eh? Think of the memes. I mean, I draw the line at Lammy. Lammy wouldn't be funny, but Rayner would be funny at the very least. Can you imagine PMQs? It'd be funny. Let's face it. And there's this feeling that Rayner's not one of them. Do you know what I mean? She might have the wrong politics, but she's not one of them. She's not a Peter Mandelson, right? She's not one of them. So it could be quite fun. Could be quite fun. UTIS 4321 says, it is important to say the names on the floor of the Congress because he is immune from prosecution if the names have been classified. Oh, very good point, UTIS. Massey's playing a smart game. He's playing a very smart game. In Massey, we trust. Simp for the Red Queen. Red Queen for PM. Let's do it. Come on, Big Ange. You know, like there's something, you know, like how Starmer's not a proper person. He's not like a real person. He's not like a normal man. Say what you want about Rayner. She's a normal woman. All right, she's thick as mints. All right, she's got stupid politics. All right, she's bad on so many different issues. But she's a real person. She's a real person. I don't believe that Angela Rayner would have emailed Jeffrey Epstein, for example. I just don't believe she would have done that. And she's a mother. She's got a family. I remember when some jumped up journalist was having a go at her for having so many kids. So, you know, can't believe you're a grandmother at the age of 40 or whatever, Angela Rayner. What does she say? It's great. My tribe gets bigger, she said. My tribe gets bigger. Can you imagine? I mean, any of these Oxford twats saying that? Come on, Big Ange. I get behind her. I vote for Big Ange over Farage. Reform, I tell you what. I vote for anyone over Reform. Even, right, as much as I hate the Green Party, and I hate the Green Party, I really don't like Polanski, right? The reasons that I dislike Polanski should be obvious. But even Polanski has been better than Farage over the Epstein stuff and over like fundamental questions of all sorts of different things. Even Polanski's been better than Farage. It's a disgrace. It really is. It's just a political gimme, and Farage has been weaker than a kitten on it. It's just disgusting. So, yeah, there's just no way I'm getting behind Reform at all. And they're getting worse. They're getting worse. On LBC, they had Nadine Dorries on, right? Nadine Dorries. And he was like, she was like, oh, the thing is, I've been really impressed with Nigel's attitude towards women. He keeps on saying we need more women in the party. We need more female leaders in reform. We want this to be like a kind of feminist friendly party and things like this. But I'm thinking like this is the same, like he's just turning them into the Tory party again. It's just like it's beyond a joke. I mean, talk about, there's not even the bloody pretense. Not even the pretense. So, I mean, honestly, I might do like a cheeky vote for like George Galloway or someone like that. You know, maybe it's David Kirtan, right? If he runs, I'll vote for David Kirtan. I'm not voting for reform at all. I'll even vote for a minor party or abstain before I vote for reform. $11 cheese says, how can Trump possibly attack Massey publicly at this point going forward? The thing is, he's still doing it, mate. He's still attacking Massey. Trump is still attacking Massey. And he's putting out absolute slop to try to, right, to try to kind of distract, right? Do you remember that video he put out as the Michelle Obama and Barack Obama as monkeys? Ha ha, funny, because that's racist. A joke isn't funny anymore. It's just such obvious crap and slop. I mean, I said in the video, based is over earlier, that Trump is not funny anymore. Somebody said, you'll come to realize that Trump was never funny. Yeah, it'd be interesting looking back. I mean, I remember genuinely cracking up, but either Trump really was funny about 10 years ago or whatever, or even like 5 years, like he was still quite funny even. He had moments even a couple of years ago, but he's not funny anymore at all. Joe Hulme says, journalist Ryan Dawson has literally mapped out Epstein Network so you can buy the map on his website and report the scandal ongoing. You should get him on. Joe, I'm trepidatious about getting people like Ryan Dawson on. Why am I trepidatious? Because the thing is that, what can I say? There are certain guests where I just get the inkling that if I have them on, you know, it's going to open up trouble. And Ryan Dawson's one of those people. Because wherever, why do I say that? Because whenever I've seen him go on shows, I've noticed the comments turn into a shit show and he comes with baggage and his fans start slagging and, you know, Whitney Webb stands come in and all this sort of stuff. And like, can I be doing with that drama? I got enough drama of my own to deal with. I got enough fucking turd slingers of my own to deal with. I want to invite more in. You know what I mean? So, you know, even in my grumpy late phase, I still did the interview era. I still had tons of guests on. I still opened up the floor to so many different people. Never say I'm not giving, friends. But my willingness to reach out is at an all-time low. What else, which is not to say, by the way, that I dislike Ryan Dawson or that I don't think he's ever done any good work, because he has done good work. It's just that can I be doing with the trouble at this point in my life, you know? What else? Someone said I need a holiday. Well, funny enough, it's half term next week. I'm away next week, so there'll be no show next week. I mean, you say holiday, going back to Wales because I mean, my bathroom done out. That's basically what's happening. It's not exactly a holiday, is it? Maximus Aquila says, internet blood sports when? Dave Green's Damien Sandow versus AA's Triple H. Watch out, watch out, watch out. AA comes in with a steel chair. I don't want to do blood sports. Right, I don't want to do blood sports, mate. I don't want to argue with Dave. If Dave doesn't see it now, he's never going to see it. What's the point of arguing with him? What's the point? I did talk about having him on for an interview, and you know, it's just a case of finding a slot. But I don't want to do blood sports. I want to see like where exactly. And the thing is, having discussed it in DMs with him now, I'm just not sure. Like, what's the point of having the discussion if you don't see it by now? Do nothing that helps them. Do not work with them, etc. If you can't see that now, you're never going to see it. If you don't get that now, you'll never get it. Period. It is where it is. It is where it is. What else? Kensal Kultra has just given £10. Okay. Jamie Smith says, keep Starmer in till 2029. If you want to zero seat labor, short-term loss for long-term gain. The guy in the chat says, AA lost all credibility yesterday. All right, so what are you doing here then, Hairway? What did I do yesterday? What did I do yesterday that lost me credibility? What happened yesterday? So yesterday, what happened then? Before I ban you, I want you to explain yourself. What happened yesterday? My two videos yesterday were the Epstein Files and Noam Chomsky, what they don't want you to know, and a narco tyranny destroying Western nations right now. What happened yesterday, mate? What happened yesterday? Come on. I want you to explain yourself, son. So let's carry on with the super chats while we're doing this. People who lost credibility is anybody who covered up Epstein, anybody who played it down, anybody who doesn't see what the shot is, anybody who's out there saying, oh, Matt Goodwin is based. No. Those are the people who've lost credibility. But I need you to explain yourself. No answer. What are you even doing in the chat? That's my question to you. Why would you even come here to say that and not even explain yourself? What a disgusting individual. Anyway, Jamie Smith, you see, part of me is kind of interested to see how long, like, as an experiment, I'm kind of like low-key rooting for Starmer to stay. I want Starmer to stay the whole time. Why not? I think it's funny. I think it's almost funny for Starmer to stay. So, I hope he does stay until 2029. Then again, another part of me thinks it would be funny to have Angela Rayner in. Because let's face it, Labour are getting smashed no matter what happens in 29. You know, I will not vote for reform, of course, but I think Labour are coming back from this. Eyes That Watch says, do not compromise. What if Elon's discussion of being pro-human is a direct snub to the Epstein network? Elon is a very... Elon is a very mysterious character, I would say, when it comes to the enigmatic, because, you know, last I saw, he was begging to go to the party. He wanted to be on the island and was basically snubbed by Epstein, which in a funny way made Musk kind of look like a bit of a loser. But I mean, maybe not, because I've noticed that he has been like pushing the Epstein stuff on his feed. So maybe he switched sides again. I don't know. Somebody in the chat says Labour won't do as badly as everyone thinks. I agree with that. And the reason they won't is because the left will shit a brick if they think Farage is going to be a PM and they'll have to get behind Labour, or there'll be a green-red coalition. And there'll be some sort of deal to keep the fascists out. With the Lib Dems, with Labour, with Greens. And they'll work out a way to make it closer to 50-50 than a wipeout. But because of that, the Tories will also do a deal with reform as a mathematical inevitability, and we will get a right-wing government next time. I say right-wing. We'll get, you know, we'll get the other cheek of the arse back in, basically. It's going to happen. Unless Trump implodes, unless MAGA really does implode between now and 2029, more than it has already. Let's say there's a catastrophic midterms, Trump is actually impeached, the whole project is discredited because of Epstein and other things. Then that might really kind of damage Farage as a brand, right? That's possible. Farage could implode himself between now and 2029. You know, I'd put even Stevens' money on that, given his track record of imploding as well. So many things could happen between now and then. But as things stand, Labour would lose, without doubt. Well, Realpolitik says the chances of Whitney Webb as an interview guest. Well, I'll give the same answer there as I gave with Ryan Dawson. I don't actually know how to get hold of Whitney Webb or whether she would come on either. I mean, certainly they'd be interesting people to have, but I get the impression that she also comes with a, you know, like you caught trouble the other way then. And you get the Ryan Dawson stands coming in and calling her a fake and all the rest of it. I don't really understand that drama. What's somebody in the chat or in the comments afterward, explain to me the Ryan Dawson, Whitney Webb beef. Why is there such beef between them? And why, wherever they go, does this drama follow them? Tech says, I don't get to tune in much because of work, but thank you for everything, AA. I'm glad I caught you today. Well, thank you very much, Tech. Thank you very much. Cringe Walker says, you might like Alistair the Great on here in the same frame as Caleb, but he seems rather good at projection of consequences. Alistair the Great, okay. Managerial Elite Toaster says, something big will happen this weekend. Prepare. What big is going to happen? What big is going to happen? Okay. I'm reading in the chat now. Okay, so what it boils down to is this. Okay, people, basically Ryan Dawson claims that Whitney Webb stole his work, and that's why they've got beef, because Ryan is an OG. He thinks that he put all the work in and Whitney Webb stole it and wrote all these books. That's the tall and the short of it. Thing is, though, that's a tale as old as time. Do you know who thought that his work had been ripped off and had beef with another intellectual for decades? Giantano Mosca. Giantano Mosca believed that Vilfredo Pareto ripped off Elite Theory, that ripped off The Organized Minority and all of that sort of stuff, and that his book, The Ruling Class, should have been like the founding point of Elite Theory, and that Pareto brought nothing new to the table. Mosca sincerely believed that and was bitterly against Pareto. And Robert Michels, who was a mentor, who was a kind of protege of both Mosca and Pareto, had to kind of tread this careful line between not annoying either one of them by praising the other one too much. That's true. They both kind of claimed Michels as their protege. And Michelle's like, was like, okay, you're both great, but they hated each other. That's true. So even in the little world of Elite Theory, you had this issue, I guess, with Mosca as Ryan Dawson and Pareto as Whitney Webb. okay. I mean, look at myself, you know. I forgot to mention in Populist Delusion that it was Don the Pleb who came up with all the ideas in there. Marcos 588 says, It's looking increasingly grim everywhere, but especially in Oz. Could you get Guard or Furious on to discuss? Also, any chance for that chat I suggested about Russian military doctrine? Thanks for all, AA. Well, a couple of Australian guys have, suggested coming on from Australia. The thing is, and I'll be honest here, I'm a little bit, when the security state gets involved, I get a little bit trepidatious. So, I mean, maybe if it was Guard and Furious themselves, maybe I'd have them on. But, you know, it'd have to be those two, I would say. Because I already know them. Do you know what I mean? On the Oz front, you know, given the person who was involved and given my views towards that, I mean, I hate to say I told you so, guys, right? It doesn't matter if it's a Fed or if it's a fucking retard. The upshot is the same. I did tell you 4 years ago. And to be fair, many Australians listened, and many did not. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. Managerial Elite Toaster says, Tromethamy was in the jabs, sterilization factor. Okay, I don't know what that means. Cole Langdon says, thoughts on Slavoj Žižek. I've read one of his books and I'm reading Sublime Object of Ideology and it's interesting. Have you read any of his works? I actually saw Slavoj Žižek live when I was a student. And I always remember he presented, okay, I'll never forget it because it was so vivid. He presented all of philosophy as a large line of philosophers buggering each other in a massive chain of thinkers buggering the last thinker. And he says, imagine this line all the way, and at the very end of the line is Socrates and Plato and Aristotle. Like, if you can imagine like a massive buggery line. And that was such a weird thing to say, such a vivid and grotesque image that I've never forgotten it, as long as, like, I'll never forget that. So you could say he was an interesting public speaker. What I will say is that I remember at that same event, I can't remember what the event was, but on the same bill, George Galloway spoke, and his speech was a lot better than Slavoj Žižek's speech. He got the room rocking and rolling. Foundations of Rhetoric, George Galloway is an S-tier orator, like Bowden-level orator, whereas Slavoj Žižek is very difficult to understand due to his lispy and sleary speech. I have read a couple of his. My interest in Žižek came through my interest in Louis Althusser and ideology and the ideological state apparatus and all of that. And where Žižek was interesting is that, unlike many fair weather Marxists who, after Althusser killed his wife and was accused of being a Stalinist and all that, kind of tried to disown Althusser, Žižek actually said, no, he was onto something. There's still something in this. And there's this kind of like slightly deeper dissident undercurrent in some of Žižek's thought that is of interest to me. But I will have to do a little, I would have to ask Caleb his thoughts, some of my other commie friends, what they think of Žižek. Okay. What else? Jamie Smith says, if you want a sensible leftist YouTuber recommendation, I suggest Helena over at the No Justice channel. She knows her stuff and isn't insufferable. I prefer to watch her over the right-wing slot. I tell you what, Jamie, I'll check Helena out. I tell you what, I'll subscribe right now. Check out and report back. That's the best way for me to remember to do things. Oh, trouble is, there's loads of people called Helena. How am I ever going to find that channel? Is it the one with 1.43 million subs with a cat, with a kind of cat girl? Is that the one? Hello, my name is Helena. Is that the one? doesn't look very political. No, this is like some degenerate anime channel. Degenerate. No. What's the... Who's the Helena? You're going to have to give me a link. I can't find it. It's not the right channel at all. I can't find it. You know, YouTube have massively buggered up how to find things. Like you can't sort by upload date anymore and stuff like that. I mean, I can't find anything on here anymore. It's useless. Absolutely bloody useless. Oh, it was called No Justice. Okay. No Justice. Here we are. No Justice. Okay, I'll check it out. Leftist streamer, neoliberalism hater, No Justice. This sounds more like it. All right, No Justice, you got a new sub. I will. Oh, look at that. I cornered Rachel Reeves on LBC. Oh, yes. We're already in the same world. Fellow LBC listener. Okay, Helena. All right. All right, maybe there's a collab. More, I want McSweeney gone. I can see where she's coming from. Okay. All right, Helena. I got you. All right. Okay. Where else have we got? Managerial elite toaster says Yang, Yujin Yang. I mean, mate, I can't read Chinese. How am I meant to read all of that? Yang Jian Yang. Okay. And Cancel Culture says Reina could absolutely be bought off. She's already been caught out. Was she though? Was she caught out? She just fiddled her taxes a little bit on a house, which is very standard MP stuff. That was just because Dark Arts Mandelson, Dark Arts McSweeney were trying to eliminate a rival castle within Labour. Think about it. If that hadn't happened, Reina would already have launched a leadership bid. She couldn't do it because she was taken out off the table. That was done by McSweeney. So, you know. Okay. All right. I think that's it for super chats. Super thanks. Hope you enjoyed today's show, ladies and gentlemen. Let's give it up for Thomas Massey. It's so rare to have anybody show guts and show heroic will and face down the system. Thomas Massey's doing it. I hope the CIA are keeping him safe. I hope Tucker is shining over him with his magic, weird Kabbalah prayers. Say your weird Kabbalah prayers, Tucker. Keep Thomas Massey safe. Good night, everyone. Check out my special interview with Shah Dazer later on Iran, where we go deep. We go pretty deep on Iran. Check it out. It's coming out at 6.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.